You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. This week's message is week two of our teaching series titled, Love is in the Air. For more information and to visit us online, visit us at midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
I heard the story this week of a man whose wife had to unexpectedly stay overnight in the hospital because her mom had been hospitalized, and she was going to stay with her mom and spend the night with her in the hospital room. And so she sent her husband home to the house with a list of things that she needed him to get for her, that she needed for the night. And he got the list, and he was a little surprised to see one of the items on the list. She said that she needed a comfortable pair of underwear. That's what it said on the list. She needed a comfortable pair of underwear. And he didn't want to get this wrong. He wanted to be as helpful as he could. He wanted to get her the things that she needed for the night. And so he texted her and he said, "How am I going to know which ones are your comfortable underwear?" And she said, "It's easy. Hold them up. Imagine me wearing them. And if you smile, you got the wrong ones. Put them back and get the other pair." And on that note, friends, let me welcome you to Mid-Current Church. If you're new with us today, do not worry. I don't often tell jokes about husbands holding up their wives' underwear, but when I do, it's because we are in a series all about marriage and God's design for marriage and how we live into marriage in the healthiest way that we can. And we are, in fact, in week number two of a series on marriage that I have simply titled, Love is in the Air. And I want to start out each week just by reminding you of a couple things. First of all, is just a reminder about where a series like this comes from. It's honestly just because in my life as a pastor, this is one of the things that people want to come talk to me the most about, right? It's about some of the ups and the downs in the marriage. This is just one of the things that I hear about or I observe couples, trying to navigate this married life together. And so I thought, well, let's just take a few weeks here on Sunday to talk about it. I did this last week and I want to do it again today. I want to make two disclaimers in a sense as we, carve out some time to talk about marriage. The first thing that I want to make very clear is I want to make sure that you hear me saying that marriage is not the goal. Okay? If you are not married, you are not a second class citizen in church or in society. Marriage is not some kind of sign of social success. The second thing that I want to say is that I recognize that not everybody here, that not everybody at Mid-Current Church is married. That is not lost on me. But if that's you, I don't want you to check out. I don't want you to think like, well, what does this series have to do with me then? Because I think it really can, in fact, be a great encouragement to you. And I would say that for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you're not married, there is a chance. I'm not saying that this has to be the case, that this is the goal. But if you're not married, there's a chance that you will be married someday, in which case the things that we talk about, I think, can provide a really healthy foundation for you to think about your marriage in the future. The second thing I would say is if you're not married and you're kind of going like, I don't plan to, I don't envision getting married, I would still say that this can be a really helpful couple weeks for you, primarily because you very well have married people in your life. Friends of yours, family friends, maybe you got family that are experiencing some of the ups and the downs of married life and are looking for godly people in their life to support them or to encourage them. And you very well, I have people in my life in this category, you very well might be in a position to encourage them and support them in a godly way. And so I really do think that these few weeks and the time that we've set aside, I honestly do believe they can be helpful for all of us, no matter what position we are in. I think they can be helpful for all of us as we talk a little bit more about this thing called marriage and how we live into it best. The question that I want to pose today is this: what is marriage for? Like in other words, like, you know, what is it intended to do? Or what is it intended to provide for those of us, you know, who enter into it? Like, what is, if we really get down to the root of it, what is the purpose of marriage in the first place? And I kick this thing, the conversation off. I kick it off with a joke about, you know, husbands and what, you know, makes them smile in a marriage, because I think it playfully points to, I think what many people are tempted to believe, marriage to be all about today, right? Making us smile or generally speaking, making us happy, right? It points to the idea that I think more and more and more of us today are tempted to believe that the purpose of marriage is to make us happy. It is a little stereotypical, yes, but there is actually some data, that there are some studies that have been concluded that showed that what men most typically look for in a spouse is some sense of physical attractiveness, and that what women look for, again, this was just, you know, a few studies that had some data that pointed to this, that what women most look for in a spouse is some sense of like financial security and stability. Obviously, this is based on a little bit of evidence. This was a broad generalization. Certainly there are exceptions to that. For instance, if my wife Erica was looking for, you know, some kind of like upward financial mobility in life, then she should not have married a pastor. That's not typically, you know, the route that you would take. Okay, so obviously there are some exceptions to this, but what this data, to whatever degree that, you know, it's pointing to anything, what this data says to me, and quite frankly, data aside, what my just cultural observations today, says to me more and more about marriage, what it says to me is that here's what I'm noticing. Here's what I think the data would say, that so many more people today are making the mistake. They're mistaking some of the byproducts of marriage as the bedrock for marriage, right? What's happening more and more today is we're just kind of getting sucked into this belief that we're mistaking some of the blessings that come along with marriage. We're mistaking those things as the primary purpose for marriage, you know, in the first place. We're mistaking some of the byproducts, good, healthy, you know, rightful things. We're mistaking those byproducts as the very foundation, the very bedrock of marriage in the first place. See, what something like this data would suggest, generally speaking, is that too many people believe that marriage is for, sexual fulfillment or some kind of means to a secure and a stable and a happy life. Okay, now don't misunderstand me. Physical attraction is important, right? As is, you know, financial means, and as is a certain level of kind of financial stability to do the life that you got to do, both and so many other things. Those are important. Do not get me wrong. But those things and so many others that we're often attracted to, that they're often the result of, or they're just a sign of like a healthy marriage. They're not, you know, what a marriage is actually for. Why? Because none of that stuff, none of the things that we're often initially attracted to, none of that stuff is a guarantee for the long haul, right? Too many of the things that we're attracted to in others, too many of the things that we're attracted to in a future spouse or in a current spouse, you know, they're just not a guarantee for the long haul. For instance, let's say you married somebody because they're so chill and they're so laid back. The question becomes, well, what happens when laid back becomes lazy? Right? What happens when laid back becomes just generally indifference, you know, when it comes to some of the values and some of the morals that you want to instill in your kids, right? Or let's say that you're attracted to somebody because of their you know, financial means or their financial stability. The question becomes, what happens when they unexpectedly lose their job? Or what happens when the market turns? Or what happens when the emergency hits and the savings account empties? Do you fall out of love? Like, well, you know, I guess we weren't meant to be, right? Do you fall out of the love and are you no longer as compatible as you once thought you were? Or let's say, not that this is true for anybody, but let's say that you're attracted to somebody, you're interested in marrying somebody because they've got a rocking body. Well, here's the question. What happens when that body ain't rocking any longer? What do you do? Did you fall out of love? Did you go, well, I guess we're just not that compatible as I thought maybe. Legal scholar John Witt Jr. warns, he says this, he says, the ideal of marriage as a permanent contractual union designed for the sake of mutual love, procreation, and protection is slowly giving way. Listen to this. Is slowly giving way to a new reality of marriage as a terminal, meaning it has kind of an end. There's a way out. Slowly giving way to a new reality of marriage as a terminal sexual contract designed for the gratification of the individual parties. Beyond even sexual gratification, I think that this could be said about where marriage is just moving in general towards personal gratification. Personal, you know, satisfaction. As long as marriage feels good, right? As long as marriage is meeting my needs, right? As long as my marriage is making me happy, well, then it's all good, right? This kind of new, as this legal scholar, you know, defines it, this new modern reality of marriage is becoming so much more about me. It's becoming so much more about self and about personal fulfillment and gratification and what makes me happy. And ironically, if I just pause for a second here, ironically, this kind of newer version as he's describing here, ironically, this newer, you know, view of marriage, you could even say like a secular view of marriage that, you know, that seems to be at both new secular views or modern views. It's like less binding, you know, less constraints on marriage. The reality is this newer view of marriage, it actually puts a way heavier burden, if not a crushing burden of expectation on a spouse that a more traditional understanding of marriage never did, right? The kind of the new way of marriage is more, you know, free, it's more, less binding, less constraints, you know, less rules, tying our hands to this thing. It actually kind of sends the message to people like, hey, you better keep making me happy. You better be perfect. You better stay on track. Otherwise, it's over. That's an incredibly crushing burden for someone to have to live up to this notion that if I don't get it exactly right, someone, they might be out. Right? The modern marriage that's supposed to promote greater levels of satisfaction and freedom, I would say it actually imprisons husbands and wives to be the perfect version of themselves that I would say it's impossible to live up to, and it likely, the perfect version of them, it likely never existed in the first place. And so the point that I'm trying to make here is that when we build a marriage, even like committed godly marriages, when we build our marriages on external factors that we think are, you know, that are going to make us happy, we are bound to be disappointed. We are bound to grow frustrated with our spouse, maybe even to think something is wrong with our spouse, or maybe even to think something is wrong with our marriage when it doesn't make us feel warm and fuzzy anymore. And here's the problem with that. Okay? Marriage is not intended to provide you with a lifetime supply of warm and fuzzy feelings. Okay, marriage was not intended to provide you with a lifetime of you know, butterflies in your stomach and twinkles in your eye. Simply put, here's what I would say. Marriage is not intended to make you happy. I'm not saying, I want to be very clear, I'm not saying that marriage cannot, I'm not saying that marriage should not, bring you certain levels of happiness and certain levels of fulfillment. It can, should bring levels of happiness and levels of fulfillment and gratification, right? It can and it should. But marriage, as God designed it to be, it is not intended to make you happy. It is intended to make you something else. Marriage was actually designed for another purpose. And that's what I want to try to uncover for you today. God's word actually tells us what it is that marriage is and was intended to make us. It was not intended to make us happy, but God's word does show us what it is intended to make us. We're given a clue to it in the New Testament instructions that in this case was delivered to husbands that points to the answer of what our marriage is to make of us. It's Ephesians chapter 5, verses 25 to 27. And today I'm actually just going to read this verse from the Message translation of the Bible, which I think actually paints the point beautifully without detracting too much from its original meaning. And so I want to read from that translation today. Here's what it says. It says, "Husbands, go all out in love for your wives, exactly as Christ did for the church. A love marked, listen to this, folks, a love marked by giving, not getting. Christ's love makes the church whole. His words evoke her beauty. Everything he does and says is designed to bring the best out of her, dressing her in dazzling white silk, radiant with what? Holiness. And that is how husbands ought to love their wives." So Midcurrent, here's what that is telling us, that marriage is not intended to make us happy, but to make us holy. Marriage is not intended to make you happy. It is intended to make you holy, okay? Romance, sex, laughter, fun, they're all byproducts of a marriage, all really great things. Okay, but they can't keep marriage going through the ups and through the downs of ordinary life. What keeps a marriage going is your commitment to your spouse's holiness. Okay, that is just a fancy word for set apart, resembling God in deeper ways, to become more like Jesus. Marriage was not intended to make you or to make any of us happy. It was intended as a way to make us, to make each other holy. Okay? Marriage is intended to put us into a covenant relationship. That's what marriage is. It's a covenant relationship. It's intended to put us into this relationship, not with our soul mate, but rather with our soul sharpener. Not our soul mate. Oh, you complete me. It's with our soul sharpener. Famous ethics professor Stanley Hauerwas, he said it like this. He said, "Destructive to marriage is the self-fulfillment ethic that assumes marriage and family are primarily institutions of personal fulfillment necessary for us to become whole and happy. The assumption is that there is someone just right for us to marry, and that if we look closely enough, we will find the right person. The moral assumption overlooks a crucial aspect to marriage. It fails to appreciate," listen to this and let me explain, "it fails to appreciate that we will always marry the wrong person. Fails to appreciate that we will always marry the wrong person." Okay? I know that's, it's not like the most hopeful sounding of messages, but listen to this. It is true. Because here's the deal. Every single one of us, starting with yours truly, okay, we are all broken and imperfect people. Every one of us, starting with yours truly, is incapable. I'll say it again, incapable of being a perfect companion and a perfect match and a perfect soulmate for anyone else. Okay? Now, again, I want to make sure you hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that in marriage you just like pick somebody, like, well, apparently it doesn't matter. So what do you think? Should we, I'm not saying you just pick anybody. We should be finding the right levels of compatibility. That's still very important. But we have to understand what the Christian vision of marriage is all about. We have to broaden our understanding of what Christian compatibility really is. Okay, more than falling in love with someone, who someone is at any given moment, more than falling in love with the most optimal version of someone at like 23 years old, more than that, marriage is about falling in love with the glorious thing that God is doing in someone else. We have to understand this as Jesus followers trying to do marriage the way that God ultimately intended. It's not about us falling in love with the most optimal version of somebody when we first met them. It's falling in love with the amazing and the beautiful and the glorious thing that God is doing in them. It's looking at one another and getting a glimpse of the person that God is creating and saying, I see who God is making you, and I see who God is shaping you to be, and that excites me. I want to be a part of that, right? I want to be in on the process. I want to be in on who God is calling you to be. I want to partner with you, and I want to partner with God on this journey of making you more into the person that God designed you to be. It's not falling in love with the optimal version at the most optimal time of life. It's falling in love with the picture of the person that you see God is making them out to be. It's not overlooking the flaws. It's not overlooking the weaknesses and the imperfections. It's just not overreacting to them. Okay? It's looking at the other and saying, yeah, I see the flaws. I see the imperfections, I see the insecurities, I see the weaknesses, but underneath them all, I see the picture of who God is creating you to be. Folks, marriage is not about your happiness. It is about your holiness. It's you and your spouse making the other better and helping each other to resemble God in deeper ways. It is a gift, this thing called marriage. It is a gift that God has given you to mature and to grow out of the sin that entangles you and to grow in spiritual maturity, right? Marriage doesn't create the sin. Marriage doesn't create the cracks in your foundation. Oftentimes, it just reveals them. And the beauty of this relationship is that God has put someone in your life to mature out of them, to grow, to overcome them, right? Because it's not, and that's a great gift to us because it was never about happiness. It was always about holiness. In a way, that's why I want to make sure that we understand that marriage is not the ultimate goal. And that's why I want to make sure that we understand that unmarried people are not second-class citizens because a relationship status is not the finish line. Right? Spiritual formation is. A relationship status was not the goal. Like, well, I made it. I got that. A relationship status was not the goal. Spiritual formation, becoming more like Jesus, resembling God in deeper ways, that is always the goal for any of us, no matter what kind of relationship that we are in. And for those of us making a marriage covenant, God simply provides a companion to uniquely play a part in that process. In Genesis 2, chapter 8, God says this. He said, "It is not good for the man to be alone, so I will make a helper suitable for him." Okay, the Hebrew word here translated as helper, it's the word Izer. Okay, you don't have to memorize that. You don't have to remember how to spell it. But here's what I want you to know. This is the word, right? He's got not good to be alone. So God said, I want to make a helper, an Izer for him. The Izer, it doesn't mean servant. Doesn't mean slave. It doesn't mean lover. It doesn't mean trophy wife. It doesn't mean assistant. It's actually quite a robust word. It got a lot of different ways trying to describe its full meaning. The most helpful definition, in my estimation, of this word Izer is this: one who fills the empty space. That's who God provided. in the marriage relationship, and Izer, one who fills the empty space. Interestingly, when this same word is used in a military sense, you know, in that context, it referred to someone who intervened in order to supply whatever was lacking. That's who God provided in the marriage relationship. Someone who fills the empty space. Someone who intervenes at just the right moment to show up and to provide and to supply whatever was lacking in the other. That the word suitable, if I, you know, kept going, I promise I won't do too many Hebrew word here. It's the word suitable comes from another Hebrew word, kenegdo, that actually alludes to the idea. It's a unique word, and so there's lots of ways to try to describe it. The word suitable comes from another Hebrew word that alludes to the idea of being opposite, but face to face. Kenegdo, Izer. Right? Someone who fills the empty spaces, someone who intervenes to supply what's lacking, and kenegdo, suitable, right? Someone who's opposite of you, but face to face with you. And so when you put this together, when we get an understanding of who it is that God provided in the marriage relationship, when you put it all together, you see here that God's design for a spouse was not someone whose brains and brawn and beauty made you forever weak in the knees. But what you see is that God's intention was to provide someone who was opposite of you. Someone who had such a view of you, that a view that nobody else had, a view of you that not even you have of you. Someone who was opposite but face to face. God's intention was to provide someone who had a view of you that nobody else did. And from that place, from that vantage point, could fill the empty spaces around you and provide for you whatever might be lacking in your life. It was someone who could see your blind spots, and it was someone who could call them out in you with truth and with love in order to sculpt you more into the person that God wanted you to be. And so what that means, I want to be very clear here. What that means is that hard conversations, not that any of you have ever had a hard conversation in marriage. What that means is that you know, hard truths communicated to one another, not that any of you have ever communicated a hard truth to a spouse. What that means is that hard conversations and hard truths communicated to one another, they're not necessarily a sign that you're falling out of love, or that your marriage was a mistake, or that, oh my goodness, I think I married the wrong person. So long as the truth is communicated in love, which is what Jesus has modeled us to do everywhere we go, speak truth in love. All of the hard conversations, all of the hard truths might just be a sign that your marriage is doing what it was intended to do from the very beginning. It doesn't mean that you can just like criticize your spouse constantly. Well, Pastor Sten said this was actually me doing my, that's not what I'm saying. This is not a free license to just nitpick and criticize and whatever. Doesn't mean that, but it does mean, I want you to hear me clearly, and I'm not saying this is not hard, okay? But it does mean that you don't have to worry all the time that you've fallen out of love or that you married the wrong person as soon as you experience any kind of conflict or tension. All that it means is that you see your spouse in a way that nobody else on this planet does. And that you have been placed as a gift from a loving God. It means that you have been placed in their life and that they have been placed in your life to help them or to help you be the person that God intended for you or for them to be. And so this then is, it's also a caution for you, again, this is not supposed to mean that this is easy, but this is also a caution for you to not grow overly frustrated with your spouse for what they are not. This is an opportunity for you to thank God. Honestly, I mean this. This is an opportunity for you to thank God for the privilege of being placed in their life and them being placed in your life with the intention of helping them to be more of who they could be and who God designed them to be in the first place. In his book all about, it's actually titled The Meaning of Marriage, the late pastor Timothy Keller, he actually, he quotes his wife who observed, and I could make the same observation, but he quotes his wife who observed that most often when people are looking for a spouse, she says they're looking for a perfectly sculpted statue, when the reality is they should be looking for a marble slab. Not to create the kind of person that they want, but to help make and to give shape to the person that Jesus is making them to be. Not a statue, a marble slab. It reminds me, and I'll close with this, it reminds me of what has been said of Michelangelo's famous work known as David. When asked how he sculpted, you know, such an amazing sculpture, Michelangelo is said to have responded like this. He said to have responded to the question, "It was easy. All I did was look inside the marble and chisel away the parts that weren't David." I can't help but think that is our assignment for all of us who have or who will step into this thing called marriage. Our spouse has not been gifted to us in order to be our own source of lifelong and personal gratification. Our spouse has been gifted to us in order to chisel away at the parts of us that are not who God made us to be. And so I'm praying that you might see more of your own role and your spouse's role as God intended it. You might see tension in your marriage as an opportunity to gain some traction in the life and in the pursuit of resembling God in deeper ways. And so I'm going to pray some bit of that prayer for us right now as we close in prayer together. God, the goal in our life, quite honestly, regardless of how we choose to go about it in a marriage or out of marriage, right? God, the goal in our life is to become more like you, to resemble you in greater ways, to become more of who it is that you intended for us to be. And so for those of us, God, who have stepped into, or for those of us who will step into this thing called marriage, this marriage covenant, help us to be more open, God, to both giving and receiving truth in love that is intended to make us better and to smooth out the rough edges in us. God, help us not to overreact to the natural ebbs and flows of marriage, but to see it all, as hard as it might be, God, to see it all as a gift designed to mold us into more of who you are calling us to be. And we pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m. MidCurrent is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin.